everybody. Welcome to the next episode of the Transpose Podcast. I am the fabulous and incredible Robin Allura. Joining me, as always, the equally fabulous and wonderful Miss Stephanie Bree. Stephanie, how the hell are you?
I'm good. We made it to part four. Can we save the whales this time, please?
No, I was thinking, though, we might call this episode episode four, The Voyage to a New Hope.
Ooh, I like it.
And then get our asses sued by both Paramount and Disney. So...
Yeah, yeah. Disney doesn't fuck around. Paramount, they're sitting there like, we don't even know what we're calling ourselves these days.
No. I mean, they decided they can't call themselves Star Trek. So, you know, it is what it is.
You know, if we just called it the Star Trek Network, I'd probably pay for it.
Yeah, I think I would too. Well, no, that's CBS.
I saw that commercial yesterday during the Super Bowl and I was like, wait, they're talking about, yeah, we're gonna have all this new content. And I Googled it and I was like, oh, it's just CBS All Access. They're just changing their name. Come on, guys. That doesn't deserve a Super Bowl commercial. That's a tweet at best.
Yes. Absolutely. So, yes. So, how's your week been?
Well, I had a rough one a little bit. I'm not gonna lie. But things are looking better, hopefully. But I wanna say real quick, I found a service that was really helpful to me this weekend. It's called Trans Lifeline, and I called them, and they really helped me feel better. So I put the phone number in a message and the link on our Facebook page. If anybody needs that, please feel free to call them. It's trans. Every operator is a trans person.
Ooh, that's cool. So
they're not counselors. They're just there to hear you talk and to just lend an ear and then share their stories.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes that's all that matters is having an ear to talk to and have somebody just listen.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the operator I talked to, she was very friendly, and she's not from Texas, but she said she understands it because she's from another southern state. I can't remember which one. And she migrated all the way to Canada to get away from it. So I'm thinking,
Yeah. Well, I don't know about about Canada, you know.
How was your week?
Let's see. My week started off okay. It had some highs and lows. I had a pretty bad freak out, as you know, because I was a hot mess. Ended up being pretty good. I ended up getting my ears pierced this weekend and got a booster for my hair. So
awesome.
Yeah, we're doing pretty good when it comes to that. So, you know, things are looking up. We'll see how this week goes. Hopefully hormones don't screw me up too much and I'm not a hot mess.
Yeah,
which is different than what, you know.
If you're ever feeling like this whole, you know, puberty 2.0 is starting to suck, just sit down, watch some Mean Girls and be like, you know what? We're normal.
Yes, absolutely. Oh my God, girl.
I fucking love that movie. That was one of the movies that made me want to transition. I was like, really?
Really?
Like, yeah. You can be a bitch and it's okay? Because, like, if a guy's a dick, you're just like, dude, fuck off.
I know, but, you know, we can be complete bitches and it's okay. No.
Yeah, there you go. No offense to the ladies out there who were born women. We sympathize.
Yeah, we do. We totally do. We totally do.
We're trying to be better people.
We're trying. Some of us are falling on our faces like me, but we're trying. God. So tell me, Stephanie, before we get off track too far, what do we got on the agenda for today?
Well, it's looking like we're going to be talking about the negative effects that being misgendered and dead naming have on trans women. And we also are going to be talking a little bit about the transition related expenses, because, you know, it's already expensive enough to be a female in our society, but then you pile on top of that all this other stuff, and oh my God, it's a lot of money. We're also talking about some of our favorite gendered stereotypes that we have embraced, and
well, that's gonna be fun.
We got our top five, and then we got a couple other things that I'll say, you know, if we get around to it, we'll let you know how it works out.
Absolutely. All right, so shall we just jump in?
Yeah.
All right, let's jump right in to some gender misidentification and dead naming. Now, I'm going to start off before we get into this too deep that this is a topic that in and of itself, misidentification and dead naming, we could honestly, if we wanted to get into a whole mess of trouble, dedicate entire shows to, because these two things can be kind of negative, and so many people have so many negative experiences. But today what we're going to do is we're just going to kind of go through it and just not really get too deep, but we are going to talk a little bit about some of our experiences and stuff like that. So I have to admit, this is a topic I don't have too much experience with personally. In my current state of transition, misgendering is not something I've really experienced a lot of. Also, I haven't changed my name legally like you have, Stephanie. Or gone through this transition in a work or social environment. So I really haven't had to worry about dead naming either. So it's for me, this is kind of built on others' experiences and things I've read. I have not experienced these things yet. I do totally expect to deal with these things at some point. But I just haven't yet. So dead naming, let's start with that, because I don't know that everybody listening is going to know what that means. And what that is when someone transitions and they've chosen their new gender identity appropriate name, someone around them will still use their old name, or as we call it, dead name. For example, like me, I go by Robin. It wasn't that long ago that I went by Robert, and it would be the fact that I present as Robin and someone's still calling me by my dead name, or in this case, my male name. This has been something that's been in the news. We've heard this before. I don't think it's really gotten a lot of traction until Elliot Page came out as transgender. And then I think there was suddenly a light shone on this that, hey, maybe we need to do something about this, because honestly, it's disrespectful as hell. It really is. It really is.
It's painful for a lot of us.
It is. It's very painful. So, you know, as I said earlier, I haven't experienced it exactly. I think if I had stayed where I was professionally, I would have. I had a former coworker tell me recently when we were sitting down talking that another person we had worked with together that still works at that location made it known that he would always use my previous names and pronouns when referring to me. And I get it. You don't like change when this happens, this is a massive change. But I think I know at first I would be corrective. I would say, hey, please don't do this. Of course, if it kept on going, because, you know, this dude's a jerk, I think I know that my reaction, it would not be positive or nice. Some people who know me know I can get very nasty when I need to be. Now, as far as the dead naming part, you know, still goes, unlike you, Stephanie, I still have to forcefully be dead named.
Right.
Like I said, I have not changed my stuff legally. So when I call into a doctor's office, when I call in for my prescriptions, or I call into something that required my legal name, I'm kind of still stuck using that. And I think there's a lot of times when we get upset over that. But I also think there's times when, as trans people, we need to be a little bit patient, because especially when you're on the phone with someone, they don't know.
Right.
They don't know. And I'm seriously, are you going to call your doctor and, you know, go, hey, don't use that name no more? No. They have to. It's your legal name. It's on the forms.
Right.
So I think I'm definitely more lenient on that. And I think a lot of people are. But I think being lenient on that also puts a little anxiety on us too, those of us who haven't changed our name, to be more gung-ho and more anxious for a legal name and gender marker change. So, I mean, that's how I feel. And I made this comment just the other day, over the weekend, when I went to get my ears pierced, the person who was doing it asked for my driver's license, and I pulled it out, and I hate my driver's license with a passion because of the photo and the names on it. And the first thing I did was, as soon as I put it back in there, was I looked at AJ and I said, I cannot wait till I can get rid of this ID. Because it adds a little anxiety still having to refer to myself like that, and on paperwork still refer to myself like that. So what about your experiences?
Well, up until recently, I've been very, patient with people, because, I was like, yeah, same thing what you just said. Fortunately for me, like, my doctor, he's really cool. And so he was always like, well, if you want to be called Stephanie, you're Stephanie. And so he even told his receptionist when they came out to call my name, call me Stephanie. And they were always, they just wrote it down as preferred name. And so I didn't have that experience, especially at work. I didn't have that at work because HR basically told everybody, okay, because they did it on my day off. They gave me a day, they told everybody, I told them on a Tuesday, I was off Wednesday and Thursday, and I came back to work on Friday. So they told everybody on the Wednesday before I came back. So they had a couple of days to process it. And so HR just said, hey, this person's coming back. They're going to be called Stephanie now. She's going to be referred to as female. We're going to let her use whichever bathroom she's comfortable in. And that's just where we are. And so, it took me a few weeks to get comfortable, coming to work fully as Stephanie. But I'm going to be honest. The first time somebody called me Stephanie at work, someone who I had heard, this is somebody in authority, somebody that I respected and is well known in the community. And they had called me the other name over and over and over for 3 months. And then the first time they called me Stephanie, I cringed because I was like, yeah, that's the name I want people to call me. But I was like, oh my God, it felt so weird being called that for the very first time. After like a couple of weeks, it was just like, oh, I'm not even going to answer to that other name anymore. I've only been intentionally dead named 3 different occasions so far. Misgendering is a whole lot more of a problem. We'll talk probably about that. But I had some asshole on my YouTube video comment. I said, hi, this is Stephanie Bree. Welcome to the Spider's Lair, blah, blah, blah. And their very first comment was, no, Stephanie, you're, and then they put my dead name down. I was like, fuck you. And I banned them. Well, they did it again. Actually, they did it twice, and then I banned them. But the first time, I just deleted their comment and said, please don't use my dead name. And they're like, okay. And then they said, okay, comma. And then they said it again, I won't call you Stephanie. And I was like, no, and then I was like, okay, you don't get it, or you're just being an asshole. So I banned them. The second major occurrence is reoccurring, and it's my parents. But I'm making a concession for them because they're making an effort. They have told me they will not accept Stephanie. But they're making an effort, and, my mom, she kind of waffles a little bit, but I'm making a concession for them because at least they are still talking to me. I know a lot of trans people who don't even have that. So
I understand what, you know, some people would be like, no, cut him out of your life. And I'm like, I'm trying not to do, I really try not to do that. But I did write my mom an email explaining to her how harmful it is to me and how much it hurts, you know, and disrespectful and blah, blah, blah. And she replied, you got to understand, I just lost my brother and now I'm losing my son and it's just really hard for me. So I was like, okay, we'll just leave that alone. The third time was, it was not the doctor's office, but it was actually the pharmacist, because I went in there and I went in there to pick up my medication. And then, of course, it was under my other name. So I was like, okay, I'll allow that because I'm not going to correct the pharmacist because then I got to have an argument. And you got to be careful when you're getting prescription drugs, because if everything doesn't line up just right, they're going to be like, kick your ass out of there. And then I can't get my pills and I need my pills. So I'm like, all right, yeah, okay, sure.
Yeah, mama needs her pills, right?
So, oh, yes. So, yeah, that's been my only experiences with that. Because everywhere else, like when I went to the bank, they know me. I live in a small town, like a really small town. There's like barely 2,000 people. Well, there's 500 people in the town I live in, but the town I do business in barely has like, I think, 3,000, 4,000 people. It's not a very big town. I live in a very, very, very small, I actually live in the country. So everybody freaking knows me, and I was a news reporter for 2.5 years, so everyone in the town knows me anyways. So when I go to places, there are people who knew me as X, but now they know me as Y, and they're like, yeah, we're, and everyone has been respectful in calling me Stephanie. I've only had a couple of people who slipped up, and then they immediately apologized, and then they said Stephanie right afterwards, and then they didn't slip up the second time, so... As much as I complain about how redneck this part of the country is, at least the people that know me are being respectful and trying. And I think maybe a part of that, hopefully, is because they know, you know, they respect me as a journalist. And so at least I have that.
Yeah.
The misgendering is a little bit different because that has happened. There have been some people who, they did call me Stephanie. Because that was, you know, either because I have already got my, some of my paperwork changed, or, you know, because I was updating, like, I when I'm applying for jobs, I'm, you know, my legal name now is Stephanie, so that's what I'm putting on my job applications. And then, you know, when, you know, if they get to the point where they're asking me for my social security card and my driver's license, then I'll explain to them here, you know, until I can get those squared away, which, you know, I'm in the process of doing. So hopefully I'll get all my stuff back before, you know, well, I shouldn't say hopefully. I mean, maybe I get a job tomorrow, but we'll figure that part out.
Yeah. But
yeah. So that's basically been my experience with it for the most part. And I personally haven't really had too many problems with that. Cause like, if I call somebody, when I'm applying for jobs, I put down Stephanie. So when they call me, they say, is Stephanie there? Now I have used Indeed. I've had some problems with Indeed just because I created my profile under my old name. And a lot of my clips are, you know, the articles that I've written from newspapers, well, they've got my old name on them. So I do have, I've had some news editors call me and I had at least two say, I'm confused. Who am I talking to? And so I had to explain to them, no, I am Stephanie, but my legal name at that time was this, and now it's this. And then I had to, you know, go through all of that. So that's not dead naming. That's just, you know, hey, I just want to make sure I know who I'm talking to.
Well, that's that when you talk about the Indeed situation. I mean, I run into that too when applying for work and stuff. But that's not true sense of dead naming. That's more just
right.
A computer that doesn't understand anything. So, I understand that, you know. As far as misgendering goes for me, that's again something else I really haven't dealt a lot with. I think I've only had one real major instance. Most of the time it's been pretty easy. As far as, you know, I'm dressed in my feminine clothes. I wear a mask that's the transgender flag. So most people have seen that and they kind of know what that is, or they look it up. Mm-hmm. You know, when I go to certain restaurants, like AJ and I went one day to, we went to Norma's Cafe here near us, which is, I love that. And I'm not going to get into a plug on them right now, but you know, the lady that took our orders, the waitress, she looked me dead in the eye and called me ma'am and said, how are you ladies doing? Thank you, ladies. I had the same thing happen at Lowe's with AJ when we went out. The cashier looked me in the eye and said, thank you, ladies, for coming in. I think I just had the one experience where I don't know what it was. I think it was probably just a slip. At least that's what I'm going to hope so, because I don't really want to find another pizza place. But my favorite pizza place, when I went in there, their cashier, she was super friendly, super nice. She referred to me as ma'am. Somebody from the kitchen staff came to the front with our with my order and said, thank you, buddy. But then they quickly walked off. So, I mean, I think that's the only thing that I've really experienced, because to me, buddy is definitely a masculine thing. But that kind of leads into one other thing we need to talk about when we're talking about misgendering.
Okay.
And we're not going to spend too much time on this, but this is something that we definitely need to talk about. And it's something that happens to me a lot. And there are two words that are used a lot by pretty much everybody. And those words are man and dude.
Yes.
Okay. These two, nobody is referring to gender at all. We understand what man was. We understand what dude was. Okay. I have girlfriends that will look at me and go, dude. And then they'll look at their other friends and go, dude, I'm guilty of that. I looked at AJ a couple of days ago and went, dude.
And yeah, I think it's more like an exclamation than an actual adjective, I think.
It is. It doesn't refer to gender anymore. It's part of our everyday vocabulary and culture.
It's kind of like or like and so. It's a filler word we stick in there when we don't know what else to say.
Right. You
dude
know.
And dude, those are, because even my sister, I just did it. My sister's a hippie. So she starts every sentence with like man. You know, doesn't matter who she's talking to. She's like, you know, right on, man. Like every sentence. She calls my mom man. She's like, you know, man. So like that, that's kind of like, you know, I mean, yes, it is technically sexist. We can get into the whole history of it. It's like mankind, you know, et cetera. But, you know, it's also, it's the current English word for,
hey,
man as a species, you know, not getting into the scientific term. It's right. The common English correct term for
person, basically person is what it is.
Yes.
You know, I have.
And I can get into the etymology if you want, but we'll stay out of that.
Let's not get into that. That's a slippery slope. I have friends and family that I laugh at all the time, because they'll be talking to me, and they'll say phrases like "I don't know, man," or "Man, you got to do what you got to do," and they quickly, as soon as they finish saying that, they apologized. Oh, I'm sorry. I can't believe I said that. I had a conversation with my brother not that long ago, and he said it. It registered that he said it, and he kept trying to turn it into woman. I'm like, just let it go, man. It's okay. See there, I just did it. But I think people need to understand those two words. 90% of the trans community isn't going to take those as you're calling me a male, especially if you're female to male, you know, or male to female.
I will take offense when somebody says, sir, if I'm like in a dress, my hair's curly, I've got my, you know, cute hat on and my scarf, and I'm done up in makeup, and somebody says, okay, sir, that's when I take offense, because it's like, clearly, I don't look like a woman. I look like a woman 100%, and I'm doing my best to present, and you're still calling me sir. That is when I get offended. That's when I get pissed off, because then it's like, you did that on purpose.
But do you get mad if they haven't even looked up at you?
No, I'm talking about people who I've been having conversations with, like, you know, at a restaurant or a gas station or wherever.
Oh.
And like, yeah, sir, you know, thanks for coming in, or have a good day, sir, or thank you, sir. You know, and I'm like...
I don't correct them, but I usually glare at them. I'm like,
well, yeah, that's their greatest strength, right? The glare.
But I'm like, because I don't want to be that girl who's all like, excuse me. I don't want to be the GameStop girl we saw in the meme a few years ago. I don't want to be that person.
Yeah, that's a whole nother subject that I don't want to get into.
Karen, if you will, in that about it. You know, I just want to be all, look, I'll be as respectful to you as you are to me. But if you're gonna slip up, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. If you're gonna be intentional, I'll be assertive. But if you're gonna be a dick, then we're gonna have problems.
Yeah. All right. Well, now, let's.
Yeah, that's not all I really have to say about it. Just it's. Please don't do it. If someone says their gender is female, then just that's it. You know, there is no. Like I just said, somebody on I had to set somebody straight on Twitter the other day, and I was like, because they were all like, well, what if you have to explain to your coworkers who X was, you know? And I was like, you don't have to do that, because if they don't know who they are, then just introduce them as a new coworker. You don't have to. I was like, if you don't know, this is the thing. If you don't know somebody's dead name, you don't need to know it. Period. Like it's none of your business. So you don't need to ask a trans person what was your dead name. That's a question you should never ask somebody while we're on the subject. It's, you know, like if you're in a relationship and you guys are you're like you're getting really close with each other and you like want to share, it's up to you if you want to share that, but it's really disrespectful to ask somebody that.
Yeah.
Now, I think we mentioned Elliot Page. I think there's a little wiggle room for celebrities when you're describing who they were, because you're not going to be able to talk about Elliot Page with saying, oh yeah, the dude that was the pregnant girl in Juno. Okay. But then once you figured out who they are, then it's Elliot Page from then forward.
Yeah. I mean, the whole dead naming, like I said at the beginning, dead naming is something we can do an entire episode on.
Yes.
But I do think, yeah, the point of this is that it happens. We need to be aware of it. We need to be aware that words hurt. Words can hurt. And at the end of the day, we all just need to be respectful. So that's all we got to say about that for today. We definitely will come back to this whole situation again later and a little more in depth. But you know, now let's move on to a little more lighter topic.
Okay.
No, I like this one. This is pretty light because it's kind of fun. And let's talk about some gender stereotypes you have embraced.
Okay.
So when I really started thinking about the topic, there were a lot of things that kind of jumped out to me. But then I thought, wait a minute, I did this shit before transitioning. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the typical Better Homes and Gardens housewife crap of you cook and you clean. And you take care of the house. I did that before.
Yeah, and I wanna put this out there, kind of, I don't know, you could say disclaimer or just a clarification. We're having fun with this. This is gendered stereotypes. We're not saying that these are gendered activities or interests.
Right. These are just things that when someone considers a stereotypical woman, things that we kind of embraced for that. And, you know, anyone who spent any amount of time around me and AJ, this is kind of going back to that housewife thing, knows that our relationship has never been traditional at all. Okay. Before I even started transitioning, there were like what some former coworkers would say, there were girly things that I did and AJ did guy things. When I went to get my ears pierced over the weekend, I started off the day, and as Stephanie knows, that I wasn't in the best mood. I kind of got hit with some dysphoria and some depression hard. bad hard, like sitting in the corner crying hard. But it was able to get, I was able to get over it, one, by talking, but doing things like this, and after I got my ears pierced, I was definitely a lot happier. And AJ made a comment that I laugh at and I smile. Some people are going to go, well, that was rude of her, but no, it's AJ being AJ, and I love her to death. But she looked at me and she said, I'm so glad I can do things or buy things that make most girls happy, and it pulls you right out of a funk. And I, you know, I can see people being upset about that, but at the same time, I thought about it, and she's totally right. She is like 100% right. I love it. I'm not even kidding. I have cried when she has brought me flowers home. Or if she's bought me a piece of clothing or even a jewelry piece. So it's something that, it's a stereotype I've embraced. And I don't apologize for it. And at the same time, I know how to make, AJ happy. All I got to do is go buy a power tool or some other implement of destruction. And she's super happy because, you know, she's not into the girly stuff like me. But, you know, if she can break something or hurt somebody, then it's all good. So, Stephanie, what's some of the stereotypes you've embraced?
Well, for starters, and this is going to sound kind of lame, or I don't care, whatever, but I love drawing a bath, putting in the bubbles, and shaving my legs. I have a playlist. I put on the music, and I make a night of it. I'm just like, this is so relaxing. Sometimes, if I'm in the mood, I light a candle. These are all things that I haven't been able to do lately because I don't have a hot water heater, and in the wintertime, I don't have hot water because, you know, my water comes out of the ground. In the summertime, because Texas is Texas, I have hot water, or at least mildly lukewarm water, which I can add a little boiling water to, and I'm good to go. In the wintertime, I could add 3 buckets of boiling water and it's still ice fucking cold. So that's a bit of a, anyways. I just love shaving my legs. It's like I sit there and I like a smooth, sexy, soft, feminine leg. And I'm like, hell yeah. Love it.
Oh yeah, all that maintenance.
I love baking, but I am so bad at it. I don't do it enough. But I just, and I started painting. Recently, I want to share my paintings, like, soon on my Instagram, so I do want to mention that. I started painting yesterday, actually, and I've always been, if you listen to my other shows, or if you spend any time with me at all, you know I'm really moody. I'm really, like, almost goth, but not quite goth, but I'm very, you know, dark, very dark. And so I was like, I bought a set of paints, and I wanted to paint, like, from my soul, what's in my heart, you know? And I was thinking, okay, I'm going to paint like a black heart and I'm going to put like a knife in it and draw blood. And I drew I'm not going to say what it is, but that's not what I painted. Something else came out. So I've always been into like arts and crafts and things, like doing puzzles and, you know, those aren't necessarily girly or feminine, but it is, you know, something that is, you know, women lean towards. And I used to do a lot of like sewing. I love sewing. I love crochet. I don't do enough of it because I'm like, I have funky dory hands that don't function correctly, but that's okay. My fingers are kind of messed up, but, you know, they get the job done. But, like, those are, like, the main things. Of course, I also am really liking, I've got into, as far as, like, TV shows, I'm really getting into America's Next Top Model a lot. And I've also been really embracing Cake Wars, but that's not necessary. Necessarily feminine, but I want to bake. I want to do more baking, and I want to do more, like, I'll say girly baking, you know, very feminine baking. And of course I love shopping, but I've always loved shopping. I'm trying to think of what are like some actual gender stereotypical things that I've like fully embraced beyond those, though. I think those are the biggest ones, you know. Of course, I mean, so I have naturally curly hair, which I know that makes some people jealous, but I love it, especially now because it's like so cute. But I'm like, sometimes I will just grab a curl and just play with it. And I've seen girls do that. So I'm like, okay, cool.
I just love the way my hair feels because the hormones have definitely, the hormones and the better product that I got at the very expensive salon that I went to when I did my hair that one time, which, by the way, that stuff is really expensive, but it's still lasting. It makes my hair so soft. So that's another thing. I guess it's girly, but it's like, whatever. I love it.
I mean, so things like that. Yeah, I can, I agree. You know, I have a meme that a friend of mine sent me. That is, it's a picture of a vanity and there's a woman getting dressed and doing her makeup and everything. And you can see all the things that she's trying to do to get ready for, I don't know, whatever it is, but it says getting ready is half the fun. And I totally agree with that. Yeah. When you're doing the maintenance and stuff like, shaving your legs and the makeup and all that stuff, those are definitely feminine stereotypes that, yeah, I totally agree and I totally embrace those as well. Okay, well, now let's move on to something that's kind of light, but it's also a little heavy, and that's the high cost of transitioning. Now, this is a topic that when you do your research, if you're a transgender individual, it's not really touched on a lot. You know, it's not really talked a whole lot about. I mean, there are certain things that are talked about a lot, certain expenses. And I also want to take a moment to kind of say to those listening, because I know we have some of our cis, CIS, however you want to pronounce it, gendered females out there. Being a woman is expensive from the start. Okay. So I'm not saying that transgender women or transgender men are worse off because it's so expensive to be us. Women in general, we have a lot of expenses. So yes. Yeah. And it's just really, it really can add up fast. And there's certain aspects that we don't think about when we're doing our transition. The most obvious and biggest expense any transgender individual is going to have is surgery. We're not going to really get into a whole lot of that, but it is probably the most expensive thing that any transgender individual can do. Does that mean if you're transgender, you have to have these? No, I know a couple of people who've never had it, any form of surgeries. They've never wanted any form of surgeries. And we're talking, they've been, you know, they've transitioned for 2, 3, 4 years. So there's no foreseeable need to. But it is still an expensive thing that trans people do have to worry about. I had a friend of mine who's a transgender man, who he was going to have top surgery. And for trans men, that means the removal of the female breast tissue. And he had been saving for a long time. I think it was like 3 years. And he was only halfway. So that's just kind of giving you an idea. But there's other things that are not talked about, like medications. If you're trans, doesn't matter, male to female, female to male, you are on some form of hormone and natural hormone blocker. And by natural hormone blocker, I mean if you are a male transitioning to female, you're on a blocker that is designed to block the testosterone hormone, which occurs naturally in men, to do its thing and let the estrogen that you're now prescribed do its thing. Now, hormones, the actual hormones themselves can be extremely pricey depending upon how your doctor prescribes them. I'm not going to talk and get into the whole things like insurance and savings programs like GoodRx and that kind of crap, because it can basically affect that pricing a lot. What we're going to be talking about is more of the cash cost. And this means you went into the pharmacy, you had your prescription, and you told the pharmacist, just fill it. I'm gonna pay the full cash price for it out of my pocket. And let's start with things like the hormone pills, because pills themselves can start at around $30 for a prescription for a cash price. Okay. And this is usually the low dosage. I mean, this is a dosage that's usually so small that most trans people are not taking them because you're gonna take that dosage and your body's gonna go, yeah, right, fuck you. And not really get any transitional goals met with it. That is pretty pricey for pills. Now, I mean, there are other medications for other conditions that are way worse, but we're talking just hormones. Now, when you compare that to, say, the patches, especially like estrogen patches, they can be 120 or more for a prescription to be filled. And then there's the injectables and the injections and stuff. That stuff is insanely expensive. It really is. But it's not something when we're transitioning, we think about. We don't think about what that's going to cost because nobody's talking about it. No one talks about that.
And even for me, like there was that was like, there was the there's the barrier of getting the pills, which depends on how which method you take, but you generally have to have somebody prescribe it to you. It can depending on their licenses and whatnot, it can be a counselor, it can be a doctor, it can be a nurse, whatever. But you have to have somebody say, yeah, you have gender dysphoria, I'm gonna give you the medication. This is the medication I want you to have. But then there's, in my case, and I know this is probably for a lot of trans women because there are side effects to some of these medications because they are changing things in your body. So in my case, I have the added expense of going to a second doctor who's monitoring certain levels that the one giving me the medication is saying, these are high risks for X, Y, and Z. We need to keep an eye on this. So I have to go to another doctor. So that can be expensive as well. Like, so for me, I have to drive 66 miles to get to the clinic, and then I got to drive 20, and this is one way. And then I got to drive 20 miles to another doctor's office. And because the way it's scheduled, they each wants to see me every other month. So every month I'm shelling out the cash to go to a doctor every month. I have to go to a doctor. That adds up. And then every so often I have to renew my medications. That's the medical costs that she was just talking about. But there's also, we all know there's like the transitioning costs, like the makeup, hair, things like that. And another thing I've been doing, which is for me and my transition, I'm a really hairy person. And so I started laser hair removal because I want to get this shit off my face. I just don't want it anymore because that is something that I felt in my transition is necessary for me to subside my gender dysphoria. And so that's an added expense because laser surgery is not, laser hair removal is not, it's not cheap. And that's something I had to account for and I had to budget for it. Okay, so like I was saying, hair removal, maybe not for everybody, but it is for me. So I had to budget that. But like we were talking surgeries. The main surgeries are there's for trans males, there's top and bottom surgery, which is, changing the genitals and getting rid of the mammary glands. For trans females, you basically have the reverse of that. You have the bottom surgery is, the same thing, changing the genitals. But then your hormones should theoretically help you grow breasts naturally, because all human beings have the capability to grow breasts. It's not necessarily a feminine thing, but it is a symbol of femininity. But anyways, but there are a lot of trans women who aren't satisfied with their growth, so they go in a step further and have implants. But there's other surgeries that are common that are in the trans community. To some people, they'll be considered, and it's every trans person is different, but these would be considered maybe not to the medical community as quote unquote medically necessary, but for transition purposes, they are necessary for your mental health. This would be something like the trachea shape, where you get rid of your Adam's apple. There are women who just have to do that. There are women who get the feminization surgery on their face or their eyes. Those are fairly common. And there are a lot of people who, we were just saying, it's expensive to get the one where you turn your thing inside out, basically, to be, you know, polite about it.
Well, everything when we're talking surgery-wise, Stephanie.
Yeah, and that's not just
all expensive.
Right, but some trans women can't afford that. So they take, and they don't want to be on the hormone blockers forever. They just want to take their estrogen because it's less expensive. So sometimes they just go and have a surgery. I can't remember what it's called, but you basically just remove the testicles, and then they're like, okay, then now your body won't produce testosterone. So that helps. That, you know, it's not any less expensive because it's an expensive surgery up front. It all depends. But no matter how you go about it, no matter which way you go, it costs so damn much money just to get to that point where you can look at yourself in the mirror and say, okay, that's a person I want to see staring back at me.
Right.
And we're not even getting into the cosmetic things that, you know, natural born cisgendered women go through, because there are women who want to have nose jobs and maybe raise their eyebrows or whatever. Trans women do those things too. The cosmetic.
But I mean, this is not that, that's something, things like that kind of cosmetic surgery.
That's separate.
That's a separate beast all itself, and that's a separate thing. What we're talking about is just the basic transitioning. And yes, feminization of your face is definitely something a lot of people do need, and it is hard. And yeah, you're right, Stephanie, a lot of transgender individuals, they do struggle with the employment and stuff, but it still means it's still, even if they were employed,
mm-hmm.
you know, even if they had the money, it's still expensive. And then there's actually, you know, we kind of touched on the cosmetic part, but there is one other aspect that is expensive, mm-hmm. and this is true for both male to female and female to male. And that is a wardrobe.
Yes.
Because you are basically taking all of your clothing that you have owned and getting rid of it and starting from scratch.
Yes.
You know? So that adds up fast. And I know, even myself, my majority of my clothing that I had, as I used to call my dude clothes, were unisex graphic t-shirts.
Yes.
I can still wear those.
Mm-hmm.
I can totally still wear those. But there's a part of it that's like, I don't want to wear that because I bought that when I was a dude.
Yeah.
And I know trans men go through the same thing. And other trans women go through that, where it's, yeah, I mean, it's not specifically a gender-specific kind of outfit or clothing piece, but because you got it when you were the previous gender, you really have an aversion to wearing it. So, I mean, that's something that, yeah, you definitely, but if you're a trans woman, you're going to get rid of your three-piece suits. You're going to get rid of your ties. You're going to get rid of your polo shirts. And I know women do wear polo shirts, but a women's polo shirt is cut different than a guy's. I had this conversation with several people, and they're like, polos are polos. No, they're not. Not even close, dude. So that's something that we all have to take into consideration. And that's, again, it's not something that's talked about.
No, and I'd like to add two things to that, like, especially, like, not just on cosmetics, but there's also, like, you know, like, okay, guys wear underwear, girls wear underwear, but girls also wear bras. That's an added expense, because once your boobs start to grow, you gotta wear bras. I mean, you don't necessarily have to, but, you know.
Well, you do if you don't want to look like a whore.
Well, there you go. But also, like, you know, you gotta buy clothes that will fit your shape, which, you know, a lot of trans women, when they're starting out, and especially before you can pass or before you're comfortable, they'll turn to either shopping online, which is a big risk, or they'll, like, just buy the first thing they see that looks like it might be their size, throw it in the cart, and get the hell out of the store. You know, and so sometimes you'll end up with stuff that either doesn't look right on you because you didn't try it on, or you didn't take the, you bought something online that you kind of got stuck with because either you send it back or you're stuck with it, and then you just got to make it work. And then there's all, you know, and then there's, you know, like, you know, if you have a lot of female friends, you know, you could always get stuff secondhand if they don't mind donating things, but then you run the risk of, are our body shapes and sizes similar enough that we can wear those? I don't know. I've only had one cis female friend who was able to donate clothes to me, and nothing she donated me fit me right. And she was the closest person to my body shape and size out of all my friends, and still nothing she donated was able to wear. The other thing is there's, like, again, we were talking, like, so a lot of this stuff's optional, but there's for some trans women, it's not. But we're talking about makeup. Women wear makeup a certain way, right? Because they want to, you know, the one of the first things one of my girlfriends told me was goal of wearing makeup is to make it look like you're not wearing makeup. But a lot of trans men, especially, or trans women, excuse me, especially those of us who haven't transitioned fully, or maybe we're still in the process, especially those who don't go through facial surgery, or we still have facial hair or whatever, you have to apply additional makeup steps to cover up the 5 o'clock shadow, and to maybe, like, you know, draw more attention to your cheekbones or whatever, so that you know, it's not just the makeup you wear, it's the way you wear your makeup, but it does require additional steps, which requires additional product, which is an added a layer, which some trans women just, like, screw it, I'm just gonna do eyes, makeup, or lipstick, whatever. And some want to do a full on face. Like, I follow a lot of trans women makeup YouTubers, and I watch a lot of them, and I'll pop into, like, some makeup tutorials on the ones who aren't trans, and it's a totally different, for the most, I mean, like the techniques are a lot the same, and what they're doing is a lot the same, but trans women sometimes add additional steps, and that's another thing. Like, sometimes maybe you buy a bra that doesn't fit right, so then you got to buy padding to make it fit right, or you know, I'll tell you right now, I am not good at shopping for bras. I'm just going to be up front. I don't know what size I am, and I don't know how to ask somebody to figure that out, because that's an awkward conversation I don't want to have. So I'm experimenting, and, you know, I've bought some that were way too freaking tight, and I bought some that were way too freaking loose, and I'm still trying to figure out what size I wear, and I'm not done growing. So I don't even know what's going to happen. So there's that side of it as well.
And you're totally right. Yeah. The whole cosmetics and makeup thing, trans women, as opposed to cis women, CIS women, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
It's completely different. I have a lot of female friends that they like to look at me when I point out that this is expensive or that's expensive. They most of the time jokingly go, well, that's the cost of being a girl. And you're right, it is. But why is all this stuff important to the trans community? And the reason is because that when we do all this stuff and we have all these, the clothing, the makeup, everything, it changes our perception of ourselves. We're finally seeing that what we're seeing in the mirror matches what we feel inside, you know, and that can be a huge thing. Those of us like myself who've had just knockout, drag out fights with gender dysphoria are constantly looking for those ways to look on the outside, and that we, you know, that matches what we feel. And that always, like you said, Stephanie, can require yet another product. And women's cosmetics and things that people are using to look certain ways, those companies know it's either you use our product or you just deal with it. And so they don't exactly come inexpensively.
Not even getting into the so-called pink tax, which, my God, I did not believe it was a thing until I went shopping.
I gotta agree. I didn't think it was a real deal at all either, but that's a whole nother thing. So, you know, when you take these high costs and you couple them with those of us who fight the gender dysphoria, and this is going back to why this discussion, why saying these things is important, because when we talk about this, transgender individuals and their allies are more prepared and more armed with information for these long journeys. But when you take those two things together, those can lead to the transgenders, one of their greatest enemies, if not probably the greatest enemy the transgender community has, and that is depression.
Yes.
That is depression. I know it affects everybody, but it can seriously be, it's an easier path for trans individuals to go down, simply because you start thinking about, here's this masculine feature that I hate. Like I said earlier in the show, that I had a bad depression dysphoria moment. Well, mine was over facial shadow. No matter what I did, I could not hide it. I could not get it to go away. Well, what did that do? That triggered my dysphoria. Well, what did that do? When I started thinking about it, it'd be like, you know what? If I had the money, I'd just go get this crap lasered off and be done with it. Oh, crap. I don't have enough money coming in. Mm-hmm. So it does trigger into that depression. Now, I don't want anybody to think I'm trying to persuade or dissuade someone from this. You know, if you are transitioning, it's not just about costs, but I mean, it's about happiness. And I think for all our trans individuals listening and those that are helping them, all our allies, having the information about these costs and talking about it can definitely, in the long run, lessen the damage done by dysphoria and the depression.
Yeah. I think we've covered the majority of it. It's just, you know, like, if you're sitting there like, well, why even, you know, we were just talking, it's mental health, right? Why even go through it? Well, there's that, but there's also it, you know, trans women are the same as cis women. We want to look pretty. We want to be accepted by society. And it's harder for us because we also have an added layer of trying to pass as feminine and, you know, attractive within our features.
Right. That's 100% true. We like regular cis biological, however you want to refer to them. We try to fit this is what beautiful is. You know, and it's just a social definition. It's not the real definition of it, but it's a social definition. And trans women try just as hard to fit that. And yeah, it's definitely a mental health thing as well of that. But yeah, we definitely need to make sure that everybody understands that this is something that isn't talked about, but like other things, we need to have these discussions. We need to have them. I don't expect them to suddenly make clothing and makeup and pharmaceuticals and stuff cheaper to get. No. But it is something that, as a trans individual, if I had this information, I think it wouldn't be such a shock when I have that. Because I can guarantee you, I see a lot of clothing and jewelry and stuff, and I go, ooh, isn't that cute? And then I see the price tag, and suddenly it's not so cute. Suddenly it's like, oh, good Lord. No. So I definitely think a discussion, just like anything else, discussions help. Discussions help. That's all I'm saying. I'm just saying, be armed with the information, right?
Yes.
What is it they used to say, G.I. Joe?
The more you know.
The more you know. Knowing is half the battle.
That's the word.
Knowing is half the battle. The other half is split into quarters for the battle. And according to G.I. Joe, a quarter of the battle is blue lasers and a quarter of the battle is red lasers. And then the other half is knowing.
Are we finally talking about comic books? Because you got me pumped.
Yes. Okay. So way to let the cat out of the bag. Damn,
sorry.
You so let's go. It's time for our top five of this week, which Stephanie, oh my God. Calm down, girl. So today we decided to go with comic book characters. Now, before we get into this, I want everyone to know this is an extremely wide topic. And we did not narrow it down to just heroes or villains or any particular universe like Marvel or DC, or even exclude characters from like the Sunday comic strips like Garfield or Marmaduke. You know, this is comic book characters. This could be comic strips because they take the comic strips and put them in a book. I know, I have like a dozen Garfield ones. So let's start things off. What's your top five, Stephanie?
All right. So my five comic book characters, I'm going to go with number five. My first one is a more traditional comic book character. I think all of mine are, for the most part. I have one that I have to kind of do a little aerobics to make it fit, but we'll make it fit. Or is it gymnastics? I don't know. Anyways, my number five is Magneto. So Magneto is a very interesting character because he has been at different points in the Marvel Comics universe and in the X-Men timeline. He has been both the greatest villain to the X-Men and also the greatest ally. And what's interesting about Magneto is at one point in time, he was not only the founder of their original Evil Mutant team, which was their first group of bad guys that they fought. He was also a parent. He had his kids. It was called the Brotherhood of Evil Mutant, and it was his adopted children were members of that group. And so it was it was a family business, and the business was being bad. But that wasn't the only, there's a theme of that in the Marvel X-Men comics, but we won't go into that. But I love Magneto because he's actually a really tragic character because he was a victim of Nazi Germany. His family was Jewish, and they were eradicated in the Holocaust, and so he had to witness that, and then the whole mutant phenomenon started happening, and then he started seeing another genocide of mutants, and then so he became very radicalized. But throughout the course of it all, he's not really a bad guy at his core. He does a lot of bad things, but his ultimate goal is peace.
He's willing to fight whenever there are others who are threatening the people he loves. And so he comes off as a villain, and sometimes he does a lot of bad things in the name, you know, a lot of bad things in what he calls in the name of doing good, but, you know, whatever. I just love Magneto. And he's got some cool powers, too. He's a giant magnet, and he's one of the, they have what they classify as Omega level. We're nerding here, but that's the highest level of mutant you can get. Magneto is one of 10 Omega level mutants in the Marvel Universe. He's so powerful that he can move the Earth if he wanted to, because if it's magnetic poles, that's how powerful he is. None of the other, not Xavier can't do that. Phoenix can't do that. And Phoenix is a powerful son of a bitch. She can't do that, but Magneto can.
Wow. It's funny that you start off your number five in the X-Men universe.
Okay.
And it's funny that you choose an Omega level mutant.
Uh-oh.
Because my number five also comes from the X-Men and is also Omega level. Ooh. I know, we're being nerdy here. My number five character is Apocalypse.
Oh, yes.
Apocalypse is, to me, he is a Shakespearean level villain with a god complex that you could fit the Milky Way galaxy in. But he's also one of those that he can be. Now, I haven't read any of the new stuff, but I have seen how he's kind of done the same thing Magneto has, at least recently. And that's go from being one of the greatest villains to somehow being a hero. I'm hoping he goes back to being a bad guy because, you know, he's not very good being a hero. He's got an inevitability to him, and that's his whole shtick. Yeah, you beat my plan. I'm going to go take a nap, and I'm going to come back. And he does constantly. But he's also very methodical and very cerebral about how he does things. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just waiting.
His motivation is not hate, like Magneto's, or revenge. His motivation is legitimately he believes mutants are superior to humans, and humans don't have a right to exist.
Well, and he has a quote that I have seen. It's been featured in the comic books. It's been featured anywhere that he shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And someone will say to him, "You're a mutant?" And his response is always, "I am as far beyond mutants as they are beyond you."
Yes.
And it's not that he just believes that mutants are superior, because he does. He believes out of all of mutant kind, he is the most superior. He himself is superior to all mutants. So if we're talking this like a food chain, there's your alpha predator. There ain't nothing that hunts him. And I mean, nobody ever, and I don't want to say ever, but most of the time, no one takes on Apocalypse by himself.
No.
No one does. You don't take Apocalypse on solo. You need at least a partner, if not an entire team or an army. And yeah, then, you're not really going to win. You're just going to do better than the last time.
Yes. I used to love, I mean, Apocalypse at one time was my favorite of all the Marvel characters, but I won't get into why he's no longer my favorite, but I will say something happened and he's lost favor with me, but then I've fallen in love with Magneto.
Well, and then there's one other aspect about Apocalypse I really dig. You know, you got to give props to the guy that can suddenly turn himself into 9 feet tall. I mean, that can come in handy at the grocery store.
Right.
So, I know that's being a little too nice about it, but, okay. So let's go. What's your number four, Steph?
Okay.
This whole, I swear to God, this whole list is an X-Men, but the next one is an X-Man. Number four is actually Jean Grey, but this is the full Jean Grey. So this includes her as herself and also is the Phoenix incarnation. Now, Jean Grey is my actual favorite X-Men of all of them. My favorite Marvel character, my favorite of all the superheroes in the Marvel universe. So that should tell you that there's no more Marvel after her. She's the top. She's the queen of Marvel as far as I'm concerned. Jean Grey is everything for me. Like, first of all, I loved her when she was just Marvel Girl, and she was just the girl next door who was really geeky, and she was into the geek with glasses. And then she evolved into not only the most intelligent of the X-Men, but also the most powerful of the X-Men. And then she has been through a lot. She's the one that gets, she's the one that, she, first of all, she dies the most. There's sort of a running joke in how many times has Jean Grey really dead or died, and is she even actually still alive? That's kind of a running joke in the X-Men universe. But also, a lot of those deaths don't count because she's also cloned a lot, or copied, I guess you could say, a lot. But Jean is one of those, like, I love her because she's the most, I mean, I shouldn't say the most, but to me she is. She's one of the most human of the mutants. There are a lot of mutants who embrace their mutanthood, and they will tell you they don't fully believe in Magneto's mutants are superior, but they embrace their mutanthood. Jean is one of those, she doesn't think being a mutant is makes her defective or it's a handicap or anything, but she accepts that she's a human with mutant powers. Some of the X-Men are more like, no, we're mutants fighting humans for equality or whatever. Jean is fully, she's just, you know, she's really human. And I was, when I was a kid, the first comic book I ever read that had her as a character, as a main character, was actually where her and her husband, Scott, go into the future to give their son to Apocalypse so he could cure them of a disease. And he, doing so, turns their son into one of their worst villains and sets Apocalypse up for taking over the world. And they didn't care that they were just opening Pandora's box because they loved their son that much. They were like, fuck the world, we want to save our son. That was a very mom thing for her to do. You know what? That's a pretty powerful human being right there. May not have been the right decision, I don't know, but you know, she did play a hand in stopping Apocalypse, so there is that as well.
Yeah. See, there's Apocalypse. He's everywhere, man. He's everywhere. Well, okay, yeah, so I can see that, yeah. So for my number four is kind of an interesting choice. This one comes from DC, and when I tell people this is like my number four character of all time, they look at me and they go, okay, well, that makes sense, but it doesn't make sense. Because of the where this character came from, the series that it comes from, it's one of my all-time favorites, and that series kind of dominates the rest of my top five. But I'm drawn to some tragic characters, and I think part of that for me is because, let's be honest, I've been through some shit. And so the tragic characters, they just intrigue me. They really do. It's not that I can relate and, you know, go do something that's on this level. But I can understand their feelings. And this one, this character, I kind of get it. And this character actually started out as a joke and a filler. And that's Killer Croc. Now, Killer Croc is a seriously tragic character. Killer Croc gets his start from the Batman the Animated series, along with like Harley Quinn. These were two characters that were thrown in just for variety. And if you go back and you watch that animated series, Killer Croc's dumb as a post. But what's great about Killer Croc is is what happens after that. People gravitate toward, they love this character. We want to see more. So he kind of evolves through the different storytelling and becomes this character that, at the end of the day, this is a stretch, folks. This is a big stretch, okay? Is not that unlike a trans individual. At the end of the day, all he wants is to be left alone, to be himself. I'm not saying transgender people go out and they take people and kill them and eat them, but you get what I'm saying. All he wants to do is basically be left alone. He has an animal nature. He's got this genetic defect, and all he wants to do is just be himself. Doesn't care. Doesn't want anything to do. He's not worried about what the Joker's doing. He don't care. He's not worried about what Superman's doing. He doesn't care. He just wants to be. And I think that's part of what really gravitates me towards him, is that's the biggest message here, is he wants to be himself, but the world's after him. So how do you be yourself in a world that's after you? So let's hit your number three, Steph.
Okay, so number three is very, it's almost like breaking the rule, but it's like right on the edge. So it's a Transformer character, but a lot of people want to, your initial reaction is Transformers are a toy line. The comic book was made to sell the toys. While that's technically true, the comics did actually premiere first, and the guy who wrote all the bios and character names and backstories for the toys is the same guy that wrote the comic books. And so as far as I'm concerned, the characters are comic book characters, even though the toys are representations of those. That being said, my number three is Soundwave from the Decepticons, and it's because he is the, in my opinion, he's the most interesting Transformer, because he's the only one in any of the media that's depicted as a parental figure. Soundwave has initially five, but later on six and then more cassettes. This goes back to the 80s, so he turns into a cassette player, a Walkman specifically, a portable tape player. And so he has inside his chest, he's got these cassettes that pop out and they turn into little things. These are his children. They make it clear in the comics, these are his kids. He created them from himself. He birthed them. So he's, because they're robots. There are no gender in the Transformers initially. Now they've retconned that so that there is gender, but originally Optimus Prime created the female Autobots as a way to understand gender so they could relate better to humans. So he created RC as the first female Autobot as a way, and we're talking comics here. We're staying out of the cartoon, because cartoon came later. But in the comics, that's what Optimus Prime did. And so he created cassettes, manufactured cassettes for Blaster, the Autobot tape deck, because he wanted to have something that Soundwave had. But Soundwave birthed those children of his. So he's a Decepticon warrior, but he's also equally a father, but also a mother to these kids. And you can see that parentage, that parental instinct in the comics and in the cartoon. He's very affectionate to his cassettes. He doesn't bully them. They're not his soldiers like the Jets are for Megatron. He doesn't give them orders. He's the one that Megatron will give him an order, and then he'll send one of his cassettes. But he's very, very loving in the way, and it's really weird how he's so compassionate to his children. And even though he is a villain and he's teaching them to be bad, he's doing it in the context that there is a revolution going on, and they believe that they're on the right side, and he's teaching his kids how to survive in a really harsh world. And so as a parent, I mean, that's just amazing. I'm not a parent, but I'm saying he's a parent. And that aspect of the character just appeals to me, because you don't have, I mean, robots don't have kids. And Soundwave is the only Transformer that
from day one had a family, and he was sold. When you bought him, he came with one of his tapes packaged, and the tapes were sold in two packs. They're the only toys in the original line that were sold in two packs. All the other ones you had to buy individually. And I just love Soundwave. Now, there's also, if you watch the cartoon, he's the coolest Transformer because he talks like a robot. All the other ones talk like, you know, cartoon characters, but he talks like a robot. And he's voiced by the same guy that does Dr. Claw in the Inspector Gadget cartoon, which he's actually the same guy that does Megatron's voice, but he does a lot of voices. But anyways, it's really cool for me because he's just, like, plus he's blue, and so he doesn't look like a villain, but he's got the Soundwave's face. This is a tidbit not a lot of people know. His face is actually the Decepticon symbol that they wear. So he is the symbol of their cause.
Yeah.
I think he's a really cool character.
Yeah, Soundwave is always been one of my favorites, and I want to kind of hit on a point you made there about he shows a little different caring to it. I can remember when, of course, I've got it on DVD, even in the cartoons, there were a couple of times when one of the cassettes that turned into a cat named Ravage would get hurt. There's a couple of times where they showed Soundwave picking him up and running off with him to get his, for lack of a better word, child to safety.
Yes. He was very parental.
Very.
Megatron was not. Megatron was their soldiers. They're expendable.
Yeah, and Starscream was just a little bitch.
Yeah. He may have been one of us. We don't know.
I don't want to claim him. He was too big of a bitch. Oh my god, I'd have slapped the taste out of his mouth constantly.
Now they do refer to the Seeker Jets, Starscream and the other two Jets as brothers, and there are Autobot brothers. There is a concept of family in Transformers, but Soundwave is the only one that's identified as an actual parent, at least in the original comics.
Right.
Things may have changed since then, but... And then they've retconned that to where, you know, there have always been Transformers, they're just rare for whatever reason.
Yeah. Well, my number three is actually a tie.
Uh-oh.
And these two characters very much mimic each other. I don't know which one came first. I don't really care. I just know that they are something that, as I've transitioned, they've kind of taken on a different meaning to me than they would have before. One is Marvel, one is DC. Now, obviously, I'm going to put the, because of where these characters come from, the DC one's kind of a little higher up than the Marvel one, but they're so crazy close that you can't really say, well, I like this one, but not this one, without the only argument being, well, that's because that one's from this universe. And that's Catwoman.
Ooh.
And Black Cat.
Yes. Okay.
So Black Cat, Catwoman. Catwoman comes from the Batman side of DC. Black Cat comes from the Marvel, the Spider-Man side. They have a lot of similarities. They have been both bad guys and good guys.
Mm-hmm.
They have been the love interest of the main heroes. Okay. They were both thieves. But what I really like about them is when you start to dissect their world at the creation of these characters. Now, I will say that the comic world has changed a lot recently to be less of this, but it was male dominated.
Mm-hmm.
Most of your heroes were guys. Most of your villains were guys. Right? Here are two women who are, on some days, they're stealing stuff. On other days, they're helping the heroes. But they're doing it without hiding their femininity. And in a lot of ways, they understand that that is actually an asset for them. You know? Because let's face it, a biological female body can move in ways a male body can't. Just take Batman and Catwoman and look at them. How they look. Catwoman can get into places there is no way Batman could. And could do it quietly. They also have been known to use their female assets to their advantage in stereotypical ways, because they know it's going to get a typical stereotype reaction out of their the male counterpart, whoever they're interacting. Black Cat does this a lot more than Catwoman does, and let's face it, Black Cat puts the girls out on display, and it can be distracting to some guys. Catwoman pulls down the little zipper just a little, you know, a little far, and that they can sometimes use that to their advantage to get in or get out of a situation. And they're not afraid of that. They're not afraid to use it. So those are my top three. What you got for number two?
Okay, before I say my number two, because this is a comic book character hardly anybody has ever heard of, I just want to point out that in Catwoman's initial appearance, and the very first time she showed up, she did not wear a costume. You didn't know she was just a cat burglar. And the second thing I want to say is Michelle Pfeiffer's the best Catwoman. So there you go, shade thrown.
Okay. Now I ask again, number two.
Number two, her name is Dawn. Dawn is she's an indie comic character from a book. Her book is actually called Dawn, D-A-W-N. The first appearance of Dawn is called Cry for Dawn, and it's not well known because it's out of print, and it's very expensive and very rare. And it's only from the 90s, so it shouldn't be as rare as it is. But anyways, it's an indie comic, so there's not a big... She has a cult following, and she's well known in circles of people like me. Not just, you know, I'm not saying trans people, but I mean, like, you know, the people that are into horror and witchcraft and D&D and fantasy stuff, because she's a goddess. And that's literally what she is. She's a goddess, but she's a very sexy woman. She's very built. She's drawn in a way that's supposed to, you know, elicit sexual desires out of men. But that, I don't remember. I haven't read any of her comics in a while, but I don't remember like what she's a goddess of, because I think she's like the goddess of chaos, but I can't remember what they actually, because they don't play up that she's a goddess very often, because she actually comes down as a human, and most of her stories are her and her relationship with her lover, and her lover is Satan, and she is in a romantic relationship with the devil, even though she's on, you know, she's a goddess, she's not on the side of good or the side of light. And that's what I think makes her interesting, because she always, she becomes a human, and then she finds the devil in his human form, and then they have their romantic life together. And then some tragedy will strike, and one of them will die, and then they'll have to be resurrected, and then she'll have to go looking for him again. And it's a cycle of her constantly seeking out her lover. Now, he's not... It's kind of like the devil in Marvel Comics is not really Satan, like that we know him from the Bible. It's the same kind of thing. It's a different mythology, so it's a different character. But he's a stand-in for the devil. And she has had crossovers with Vampirella. And the crossover she did with Vampirella was one of my favorite comic books of all time, because they're snared. The women are trapped by this other demon who is infatuated with one of them, and I don't want to say which one because that spoils the comic book. And so they're actually trying to entertain him by telling him horror stories. And so each issue in the series, one or the other will narrate a story, and then they'll stand in as the characters in the story. It's really amazing, but it's a horror comic. But it's not your typical horror comic, because it's like these characters are... Well, you know, Vampirella, she's a little more known than Dawn, I think, in some respects, because I think she had, like, she had a popular trading card in the 90s when trading cards were popular. Dawn did not. The reason why Dawn, Vampirl is very racy, but Dawn was sexual. And so she was, you know, they have sex in her comics and explicit in some cases. And she's having sex with the devil. So that's why her comics are so rare. There's a lot of bookstores that won't sell them. There's a lot of comic retailers that won't sell them.
How you like your horror movies is coming into play on that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, not my cup of tea, but okay.
And, you know, putting that at number two, probably considering we've already the X-Men are already done, and we've already talked about Transformers, you can kind of guess where this list is going now.
Well, let's hope. Now, anyone listening, you've probably figured out, my number one or my number two and my number one. If you know me and you've, you know, interacted with me for more than 5 minutes. I recently, when I was putting this list together before I get into this, my number two, I asked a lot of people that I spend a lot of time with, what do you think my number one character was? And they usually would respond with the person that's on my number two. I had one person get this right on my number one. But then I immediately had the thought of, good Lord, we spend too much time together. Even AJ got it backwards. Even AJ got it backwards. She put my number two at my number one spot and my number one at my number two. So number two... big shocker. Are you ready? The Batman.
Okay.
The Batman. Now, let's take away the money aspect, the billionaire businessman. Okay. What draws me to the Batman? Again, number one, tragic character. Number two, big thing for me is Batman stories tackle so many different things. Nature versus nurture. Different things along those lines. But I think the biggest thing for me is, and this is where it's a little different than the Marvel Universe, is Batman exists in a world where the vast majority of the heroes are what they call metahumans. These are people with extra human abilities, superhuman abilities. Okay? Yeah, there's some aliens and stuff, but whatever. And he is a regular guy. And he has to compensate for that. And he compensates with gadgets. You know, that happens. He's also very cerebral. Again, kind of like Apocalypse. He solves the problems. Not every problem is going to be solved by him crashing through a window and punching somebody in the face. Granted, that happens a lot. But not everyone. A majority of his villains are everyday people that are, they've gone to the side of villainy. They've gone to the side of villainy because of some sort of tragic circumstance. We don't know all of them, and we're not really going to get into that. But for me, the Batman is definitely my number two. Plus, he's also built up others around him and sends out that message that, you know, yeah, the world we live in sucks, but anybody can make a change. You don't have to go dress up as a, you know, a giant bat and swing across the city, but you can be a force for change. So that being said, Stephanie, what's your number one?
All right, my number one is actually your number two. It is Batman. But I've already spoiled it. We mentioned that back when we were talking about movies. We were arguing about, and I already said Batman was my favorite superhero character. So I couldn't really backtrack on that. But he is. He's always been my favorite superhero character.
A lot of the things you just said exactly are true, you know. And a lot of people say, well, that he's basically the DC's version of Iron Man, except he's not, because Iron Man relies on a lot of advanced, like, robotic technology. He enhances himself. Batman doesn't. His suit is not alive like Iron Man's suit is. Batman is just a guy in a rubber suit who can beat up gods with his bare fists. Iron Man got his ass kicked by Thanos, so there you go. But anyways, I hate Iron Man, by the way. I should have mentioned that at some point. My thing with Batman is also, I love him in almost all of his incarnations. I love all of the movies that he's in, and that includes the one with George Clooney. It's not my favorite Batman, but, you know, I like cheesy stuff. So that movie was, to me, it was entertaining. And I absolutely loved Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy. I think that's the best rendition of Poison Ivy we've had on screen so far, including animated, but that's my opinion. But I think Batman is interesting because he's not always been what we classify as a superhero. He is a crime fighter. Batman started out as just a detective, and not just any detective. He's the namesake for DC Comics. DC Comics stands for Detective Comics. And his book is not called, when you buy a Batman comic book, it is not called Batman. It is called Detective Comics. You go to the comic book store and you buy Detective Comics and read about a character named Batman, because he's a detective first. And that's what draws me to Batman, because he is the smartest of DC's superheroes. What do they call themselves? The Justice League? I was going to say Avengers, but I knew that was wrong.
Well, yeah.
But he's not like Tony Stark smart, where, you know, oh, we need to invent this new technology to save the universe. I got it. Snap my fingers. Here it is. He's like real smart, like actual, like, people smart, not made up smart, like, because he's a comic book character. Now, sometimes he does things that he comes to conclusions that, you know, somebody in his position might not have come to. And his moral compass is kind of wacky, because, like, again, it goes back to the whole family thing. His whole origin is he's a tragic hero. His parents were killed, and his dad was a do-gooder. He was rich, but he was using his money to help the poor people. And Bruce Wayne witnessed his dad get killed. And instead of continuing his dad's legacy to help the poor people and bring them out of poverty and fight crime that way, he just goes around beating up bad guys. And then he uses his money in a way that, yeah, he helps the, I'm going to say DC Avengers, because I can never remember what they're called. What are they again?
Justice League.
Justice League. Okay, God,
you call yourself a nerd. I am disappointed in you.
I don't like the JLA.
Well, I can't say I disagree.
Anyways, so, like, yeah, for me, I think he's a good superhero, but I like him better when he's not a superhero. I like him better when he's solving real problems in Gotham City that use his brain. Not when he's punching gods with his fists. Not that it's, like, not cool to see him flying around with the you know, Superman and Martian Manhunter and, you know, all of those people. But, you know, yeah. He's more interesting when he's in Gotham City. You take him out of that, and it's like, okay. The main reason why the reason I have a hard time with DC Comics in general is because all of their superheroes are gods, and the villain that defeats them is a fucking banker? Christ, give me a break.
You know what? I agree with you on a lot of that, and I'm gonna put in one other thing too here. Batman himself had a plan, or has a plan, depending on how you want to talk about it. Has a plan because of a natural paranoia that he has, and I can relate to that, but he's got a plan to basically neutralize every member of the Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
Just in case, because he's one of the only normal dudes. There are a couple of others, but he's a normal guy. So, you know, he's got these plans to stop the Flash and stop Superman and stop the Martian Manhunter and Wonder Woman. And it's just a, he had, it's not something that he went, oh, yeah, that villain used that. No, he freaking thought about it. He took all the data and he sat there and he analyzed it. Unlike Tony Stark, he didn't snap his fingers and his computer go, yep, here you go.
Yeah.
But that is what it is. Anyway, I have to do say I am an Iron Man fan, but for different reasons. My number one sticks in that universe. And it's one that I've had several people, including AJ, tell me I might have an unhealthy obsession with. And the reasons for this character are, the reason I gravitate towards this character is the why this character does what they do is so similar to my number two, but they do it with even less. And that's Batgirl.
Okay.
She's got no resources until hooks up there and gets connected to Bruce and Batman. But she was out there doing it by herself at first with a costume that she made on her sewing machine in her bedroom with no little gadgets. You know, that she didn't have any of that stuff. What she did, what she had, were makeshift stuff. Now, Batgirl, there have been a few different ones. But the one that I think I gravitate more is probably the one everybody knows, and that's Barbara Gordon. Where does my unhealthy obsession come from? I have no idea. But I have, if you walk into my house, you can definitely tell there's a Batgirl vibe. There's at least one thing that is Batgirl in every room of my house. It's the weirdest damn thing, but it is what it is. I just think she's a way more complex character, too, because of who her father is. And he's the chief of police. Now, while he's cool with Batman, and this happens a couple of other times in the comics and TVs and different different ways that these characters are portrayed, while he's cool with the idea of Batgirl being out there helping, he has no idea it's his daughter. And when he does find out, it's a lot to take in. It really is. And he doesn't always handle it well. But I think she shows that even more so than Batman, that she's really a more hopeful voice that anybody can change their environment and their world for the better. Again, doesn't mean you need to go out dressed up like a giant bat and punch people in the face. You'll probably get arrested in our world for doing that. But Batgirl stands at the top of my list. So that is our top five for this week. Thank you everyone for letting us nerd out on that one. So that's about the end of the show. That's what we've got. So I want to thank everyone for listening today. This has been a lot of fun. I'm looking really forward to a lot more episodes. I hope you all enjoyed this as much as Stephanie and I do. And I hope it helps some people in some way get a little understanding into our little worlds. Because you never know, you know, we can line up with others in different ways. That being said, Stephanie, do you know what next week's topic is?
Yes, you don't want to miss this one, people, because we're going to be telling our coming out stories.
Yes! so excited for this one. Oh, it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be personal, but it's also going to be fun because I think each of our stories will be a little bit different. But I think it'll be worth sharing because it's a milestone in a trans person and any LGBT person's life. You know, when you finally just say the words for the first time.
Absolutely. And I have another add on to that about my coming out story. And I'm going to tell everybody a little bit about that. And something that people say to me all the time that I and how I respond to it when it comes to that. But yeah, next week is going to be, it's going to be good. It's going to be really good. And I'm excited to tell my coming out story. Stephanie, I know you're excited to tell yours. One other thing real quick before we cut out, and I want to thank everybody who is joining us by listening to this broadcast or whatever the hell you call a podcast, on iHeart. Welcome. You're joining the wonderful people of, that listen to us via Podbean, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. So we're really excited about that. I know I am. I'm excited. It's another platform for people to hear us. Whether that's a good thing, we'll wait and see. I don't know. I don't know if it's a good thing that now my voice is in so many different places. But yeah, so thank you again, everybody, for joining us. We hope to see y'all next week. Same time, same channel. All righty. Stephanie, anything else to add?
Yes, don't forget to go to the spider's lair where chaos resides and get a whole lot more of me.
I'm going to be nice. And don't forget to find us on Facebook at the Transposed Pod. Until next week, everyone have a great one.